Blog Talk Radio. That's the Whispers right there, and that is called Innocent. And what a nice, what amazing, you know, that feeling of that time, Babyface and his feeling that he put on the Whispers, and you know, Leon Silvers and what he did for the Whispers, and you know, it's just so much that was happening back in the time that we're going to be playing music from. And so, and I'm, you know, the Whispers, they did a great and amazing job, as well as the stuff that they did for themselves that they produced, and Nick Carwell wrote and produced, and you know, with the Whispers and stuff. So much love to everybody. I hope everybody's good in the world. I hope you are doing good. I know that there's so many devastating things that happens as life goes on in our world that we live in, but you know, we have to try to find a joy somewhere along the line, because we will be consumed by all the hatred and all the sad things and the bad things, and we won't be able to function well. So that's what this hour or two is for, so that we can just try to just relax and just kind of chill and get away from the news and, you know, people misrepresenting the news as well, as Greg so eloquently posted the other day. As a matter of fact, he said, and she needs a makeover on top of it. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, guys, so we truly, truly need to just try to, you know, do what we can to be good in a bad situation, right? So that's really important. So anyway, guys, so listen, I want to play some other things by Solar I haven't played before, right? So so let's get going on this show. Much love to all of our listeners around the globe. May God bless you and keep you. I hope you guys are well. Much love to my partners that work with me, Don Fleming, Greg and Astrid, and you know, all the you know, T. Meyer and Gala, all the people that are, you know, the hosts of the shows and stuff. Thank you guys so much for your love and support. And so let's get it going. All right, here we go. So I want you to kick back, relax. Listen, since I am from the Groove Dynasty, I'm gonna start it off with the Dynasty song.
We'll be right back.
Everything You Do. And that is a song by Lakeside that I never played before. And so I'm just so blown away by it. And I'm so lucky that I found it, because what a beautiful song it is. My. And so let me just reiterate what else I played in the block. Shalimar, I played a song called Girl. Man, I never heard that song either. It was stuff that we did back in the day. I can't remember these songs. I shouldn't say I never heard it. I heard that one, but I just don't remember recording it. And we are very excited, because today we have a very special guest on the line. And is my brother, my longtime brother, from another mother, Mr. Glenn Barbie, is in the house. Glenn, are you there, my brother?
I am here, Wardell. What's up, my brother?
Oh, man.
How are you doing, sir?
I am blessed, man. And you know, it's been a while since I've, you know, heard your voice, but I've been talking to you periodically and stuff. So, but it's always better to hear your voice, and even better to see you.
Thank you.
How you been? How have you been?
I've been great, man. You know, it's a blessing, as you know, to be around. I mean, you and I go back, I would say, maybe 40 years or so. Does that sound about right?
Yes, that's right. You're telling
me. I believe it was, because it was in the 80s.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
In any case, you know, everything is great. Been doing some writing actually lately, and
really?
I may connect, believe it or not, with our old buddy Leon, and try to come up with some more hits many years later. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh my goodness gracious, look at you. So I want you to kind of share your story with us, man, because you know, you've been a busy man, and you were busy also in my hometown, my home state for sure. So I want to just kind of back up your life, you know, Mr. Barbie. I mean, first of all, this guy, man, it's embarrassing to stand next to him and take a picture. I feel like I'm his girlfriend. He's so tall. Why didn't you play? Did you play basketball as a kid?
I played basketball, but actually my sport that I was really good at was baseball. So I played a lot of baseball and softball. And of course, shot hoop a lot. You know, in fact, with the Silvers, including Leon, Ricky Foster, and others, we used to play ball quite a bit in between, you know, recording sessions and writing songs and things of that nature. And they're very good in, you know, back in the day, we were all very good in basketball. But my sport was baseball that I loved and played at a very high level. I don't know about an elite level, but I was pretty good.
Oh man! Well,
yeah.
And how tall are you, Glenn?
I'm six five.
Wow!
Isn't
that the height of Magic Johnson?
No, Irvin is about 6'9".
Oh, he is.
So he's a bit taller, and I definitely have to look up to him every time I see him. So it's probably a similar thing to you when you see me. But he's a pretty tall guy.
Not
as big, but 6'5" is, you know, I'm a little bit shorter than Kobe was, that kind of thing.
Oh,
wow. So I ran
into
him a couple of times. He was just a little bit taller than I am.
Man, yeah. Oh, man. Now, I'm going to get to this. See, this question I wanted to ask you, I'll be jumping. So I want to go back a little bit. So, and then I'll get to that question. Now, when you were...
No worries.
When you do so, how did you get going in music, Glenn? How did that even come? Yeah, I guess you were playing sports with the Silvers, so it seemed like was that what influenced you to get involved in music?
You know, I guess it was again just a blessing and a coincidence. The initial introduction to music was through two individuals. One was Ricky and Leon Silvers, specifically, And then Jackie Jackson, who's the eldest brother of the Jackson 5, or now known as the Jacksons.
Right.
I knew both of them pretty well before I even had sort of started in music. But I was a child prodigy on piano, so I grew up playing the piano. I was formally trained early on, and then I was sort of self-taught for several years when we didn't really my family didn't have a place to put a piano in our house, so I only played pretty much at school or if I went over someone's home that had an actual piano, like a spinet or a grand piano, because back in those days, when I was growing up, they didn't have these portable keyboards now that people have that sound as good as, you know, I mean, you know, they have synthesizer sounds and pretty much every other sample of anything, including drums, bass, you know, horns, et cetera. So now you can come up with a really great sounding recording and demo from home on a relatively small, inexpensive piece of equipment, whereas back then that wasn't available. So you kind of had to do with, you know, do with what you could.
Right, right.
So it was like a cassette player or something to tell you how old I am.
Wow, that's awesome, man. So did you start writing songs at that point? Did you, when did the songwriting part come in?
Well, the songwriting part evolved from, number one, I was always creative and playing stuff in, you know, on the piano, for example, that wasn't the music I was given. I would sit there and sort of play around and come up with various melodies and, you know, hooks and et cetera. And my family and people that I used to play near used to say, man, that sounds great. What song is that? And I said, I don't know. I just, you know, coming up with this just now. And they said, man, you really have a gift. You know, and I heard that a few times. And then when I started hanging around with Leon and Ricky Silvers and Jackie Jackson, obviously they were professionals in the music business. So I would see what they were doing and how they would, you know, rehearse or prepare. And I kind of got a better idea of what it was like to write and create music as opposed to just listening to it or appreciating what someone does or even getting some sheet music and playing it. And by the way, I did have some musical roots from people that I grew up around, because in my old neighborhood, I used to live near Ray Charles and Tina Turner and their families, and Louis Johnson. Lived near, fairly close to us, and we used to catch the bus together to junior high. and Lewis was in a group called the Johnson 3+1 when we were in junior high and then high school, and then shortly after graduation was when he and George, I guess, somehow connected with Quincy Jones, and then, you know, the rest is history on that.
What high school?
But yeah, I remember Lewis from, you know, sixth and seventh grade, you know, so.
Wow. What high school did you guys go to?
By the way.
What's that?
Pardon me?
May
Lewis rest in peace, because he's gone on to heaven at this point. Yeah. But, and then I don't know if you knew this, but Kevin Spencer and I went to school together in the 10th grade, as well as Cheryl Cooley. She was in our class.
Wow.
Because I went to Crenshaw for the 10th grade, then I went to Hamilton, a school called Hamilton High in Los Angeles, for the 11th and 12th grade, and that's where I graduated from.
Well, okay. So you had, and you met all these people before then?
This was before I had anything ever published or heard on the radio, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Wow.
Sometimes things just happen that way, you know, where you're surrounded by greatness, and so, you know, for whatever reason, it inspires you, or you get incentivized to go out and do something yourself, and that's kind of what happened. And, you know, and of course I met you. I remember meeting you at the studio. at Studio Masters. And then we used to hang around at Leon's house when he lived at that house in L.A.
On Dinker, 83rd and Dinker?
Yeah, the one down there, yeah, the one down in that area. And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Paul Jackson lived near there. I think John Barnes grew up around there. You know, John Barnes, he was the famous songwriter and keyboardist extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. Played on everybody's songs.
Billy Preston was close,
too. He rest in peace as well. Huh?
Billy Preston was close, too. Billy Preston?
Billy Preston? Yeah, we used to see him all the time. Yeah. You know, interestingly, he used to just be walking up and down Crenshaw. I don't know if you knew this, but he literally would walk up and down Crenshaw Boulevard. And you know, you could tell it was him. He had this big afro, and he dressed a certain way. He would just,
you mean
like,
after
walking
he was
up
famous?
And, yeah, yeah, because he was famous in the in the 60s. But then, I'm talking about in the early to mid-70s. He'd walk over near that area where, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but on the Crenshaw Strip between a street called Vernon and 52nd Street, there's this little kind of curve that goes around, and Jim Kelly used to have a karate studio there. And so I used to go there and watch them train in martial arts, which I subsequently got my second degree black belt, but that's a different thing. But I used to watch Kelly train, and, you know, I just enjoyed watching it. And then, you know, he had Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee when that came out in the about 72 or 73.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
Yes. Man, your story is amazing. You go, and then they did the car wash, the movie Car Wash, right around there as well. Right?
They did, yeah. And I remember Norman Whitfield. I used to see him all the time. The Norman Whitfield Sr., I used to see him a lot. He used to hang out at Maverick's Flat, too, which is where I met Howard Hewitt before he became famous. And James Ingram would be up there.
Right. Yes, yes.
You know, and you remember James used to do, I don't know if you remember this, but because you were playing a lot, you know, so you were kind of isolated in the specific area where the drums were and stuff. But James used to come in and just hang out. And I remember he said, yeah, man, I had this demo that I sang on called Just Once, and Quincy heard it and loved it, but he didn't have anyone to sing it, so he asked me if I would sing it. And I did. So, and then that in 100 Ways came out, and the rest is history. His brother, Philip, used to hang around with us too, Philip Ingram.
Yeah, and Philip was in Switch. Yeah, exactly. And still is in Switch.
I didn't know that. I haven't seen him in quite a number of years. But it's amazing how many people came through our sort of circle of friends.
Yes.
Because I remember Rick James and his kind of crew. There was a guy named Kelly, or they called him California, that used to be around there. Tina Marie and her sister Jill Jones, who ended up doing things with Prince.
Wow.
And I tell you, crazy.
This is
crazy. And we knew all of them. They used to just kind of hang around.
Just got
Do you remember the? Do you remember the story? This will be weird to tell because I wasn't actually there. I heard it secondhand, but the Reel to Reel guys, a couple of them were hanging around with Leon, and they went up to Sunset Sound or something, and Prince happened to be there, and there was a ping pong table there. And I guess Leon and Prince played ping pong. So that would have been a funny story to get. Maybe if you have Leon on the show, you have to have him tell that story. But I can imagine that must have been crazy.
I know, because Leon hates to lose.
And,
Lord.
Yeah, he's a great guy. But and then I don't know if you remember this, but we used to go play ball after the studio, and we used to play with Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam.
Wow.
We'd go to a gym and play basketball like at midnight.
Now, I remember we used to go to UCLA and play a lot.
We'd go there. We'd go to the park in Santa Monica. There were a bunch of other places.
The park in Santa Monica was, that was definitely a spot that we used to go to. Yeah, I enjoyed doing that with Leon. He was really into, I thought he was an NBA player or something. He was into it, man.
He was very talented in basketball. I think he told me he still plays from time to time, maybe not as often.
Wow.
We're getting a little bit older, and it's a little hard on our our joints and our backs to be out there with the young guys playing, but it's still a good cardiovascular workout.
Yeah, I absolutely.
And as you know,
I know. And I just want you to know that Greg is saying hello to you. He wanted to make sure I said hello from the UK to you.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
What's up, Greg?
He hears you. So,
and Bobby D, you know, I did an interview with Bobby D earlier this year.
Oh, really?
That's awesome. That was fun.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we talked about a few things related to what was going on.
Right. Now, why don't you tell us, because after high school, because that's where we were, after high school, when did this doctor dream and passion come up for you?
Oh, yeah, maybe the audience should know that I am a licensed physician, board certified in family medicine. It had been a dream of mine since probably maybe I was about 9 or 10 years old. I knew I had the intellectual abilities to grasp, you know, the scientific aspects and other components that, you know, are important in being a physician. But, I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I thought, you know, that's what I'd really like to do. Once I graduated from high school, I really was at a crossroads because shortly thereafter I when I was connecting with the Silvers and Jackie Jackson of the Jacksons. And so we used to kind of hang around and stuff. And, when I had my first song out and, you know, was starting to write a few things, I thought that was very interesting and a lot of fun, and I wanted to pursue that a little more. So I did that for a number of years before I actually, I finally said to myself, I really have to make a decision now. This was in my 30s at this point, where I said, I better either go do this or forget about that dream of becoming a doctor. And so I decided to do it. And you probably remember when I dropped off the scene and I just said, you know what, I'm going to college, med school, residency, and then have my career in medicine, which is what happened.
And it was just weird because all of a sudden you were in Philadelphia. I go, what? He's in my home? What are you doing?
Yeah. I went to Drexel College of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
It was formerly known as Hahnemann, which was right near Center City, Philly, for anyone that knows that area like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm craving it because I crave that food there in Philadelphia I grew up on.
Philadelphia has amazing food. You're absolutely right. I'm glad I'm not there now because I'd be eating cheesesteaks every day. I'd be going to the Italian market. Are you familiar with the Reading Terminal?
Yes.
Did they have that when you were there?
Yes.
Okay. So the Reading Terminal is this place in Center City, which is kind of like an indoor farmer's market, but it's Monday through Friday, and I think sometimes on Saturdays, but never on Sunday. And a lot of the vendors in there, not all of them, but several of them are Amish. So they come there every day in their buggies, and they make what they call fresh killed chicken. I don't know if you know what that means, but they kind of pluck it right there on site and immediately, you know, roast it or fry it or whatever they do. And they also have baked goods and stuff. But anyway, that whole Reading Terminal market has every kind of food you can imagine, and you can walk through that whole place and just have the greatest meal imaginable. And
wow.
I'm sure you've enjoyed plenty of them there.
Oh, absolutely. I have a question for you because I don't get to ask this kind of question because I haven't had only one other artist I know that became a medical doctor I had on. I'm trying to remember, was it from Brass Construction? But anyway, let me just get to it. The question, what was it in you that made you want to be a doctor? Is it about serving people, helping people, or was it the intellectual part of it and the science part of it that drove you in that direction? What actually pulled you in? I mean, would they give you that much passion?
Yeah, I think the passion came from, if I could digress for a moment, I was somewhat a sickly child in my early years. And when I'm saying early years, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the hospital a number of times. I had really bad allergies, food allergies, and others. And I had asthma, which, you know, at that time was not as easily treated with some of the medicines they have now. Back, you know, when I was that age, there were basically one or two medications, and they all had really horrific side effects. So sometimes the treatment was as bad as, you know, having the disease, or, you know, there wasn't really a cure. There were just sort of, I guess you would say almost palliative, which basically means it treats the symptom but not an underlying disease, let's say.
Oh,
so
right.
My asthma treatments were bad. I mean, they would make me, you know, have all kind of side effects that were horrific. So sometimes I didn't even want to take my medication because then I knew I was going to feel even worse sometimes. But if it was life-saving at the time, of course I had to.
Right.
I couldn't breathe, for example. So, but anyway, so all the times I was in the hospital, I was in teaching hospital. So I'd always see the young doctors come in the morning, and then they'd have some older ones or more. So I'd see the medical students and the residents and the attending physicians, which is like what I ultimately became. So sort of the supervisors and the people that are teaching the younger physicians about their medical specialties or their areas of expertise.
Wow.
I would talk to them a lot, and because they had more time to talk, you know, the attendings are usually, you know, supervising a lot of different doctors and medical students, so they don't have time necessarily to speak to the patients for like an hour, whereas a medical student, a lot of times they would sit there and talk to me for 30 minutes, an hour, or even longer. They'd come back, you know, and just say hi or whatever. So, you know, because they were learning how to deal with patients and they want to get the most thorough history as possible. So anyway, during the interaction, I felt more and more that it was something that I could do. And I said, I think I probably have a gift for this. And sometimes when the doctors would round, attending physician would say to me as a 5-year-old or whatever I was, so what do you think about, you know, this circumstance and what would you hope to gain from what we're doing? And then I would explain it to him in quasi-scientific terms, you know, the best I knew at my age.
Right,
and the
right.
guy would go, you know, you should be the doctor and you should be teaching, you know. And so I always kept that in the back of my mind. And right around 10 years old, when I started feeling healthier and wasn't really on any medications at all.
Thank God.
I said, this is what I'm going to do. And then it just so happened that I had a musical interest as well, because I had, you know, there was identifiable talent there somehow. And so I thought to myself, well, I've already done the music part. Now let me go off and do the medicine part. And it was probably the greatest joy of my life, other than having, you know, hits on the radio or in a film, you know, where you see that and it, you know, people are enjoying it and stuff. That's very gratifying as well. But to help people to stay alive, let's say, or to improve their health, to go from a relatively sickly state to being healthier in whatever fashion that occurs, whether it's weight loss, medication, et cetera, it's very gratifying. And I've met so many different types of people and have had so many interactions that, you know, it's just been a blessing. And I feel I'm pretty good at it, and patients tell me that I am. As well as my colleagues, but I still love music too.
Yes.
I listen to music every day.
Yes. I want to get to the music questions, but one last doctor question. All right. So, when COVID came around, what was the mindset of doctors? You guys, what was it like? You know, because people were dying like crazy. It was a scary time, but yet you had to rush in as first responders and bless these people right where they were. And so, I'm not asking you as an individual, because I don't want to put that you're still doing what you do. So I don't want. But as the overall, the question is for the overall community of doctors, like, what was the feeling like? You know, how do we deal with this? How do we take care of our people and at the same time make sure we're okay?
Yeah. Well, the concise answer to that is, as you know, when COVID first emerged as an issue, as a medical issue, first of all, you know, we weren't prepared for that. I mean, nobody saw that coming. I mean, there were some predictions and some public health people that had felt that something similar to what was seen almost exactly 100 years earlier, the Spanish flu, I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes.
But it had a similar effect on the world back then. But in any case, it was very difficult because the way that people travel now, as opposed to how it had been even 50 years ago, where people, you know, weren't as crowded and didn't have as much contact. So, for example, if you have a contagious disease and you're in a city with 7 or 8 million people, you know, and you're in relatively close confined areas, obviously the contact volume is going to be pretty phenomenal, which it obviously turned out to be. So the unfortunate circumstance was that it occurred. People, I think initially, not the scientific world, but I think people in general felt that it wouldn't happen to us because it was, you know, somewhere else and it's never going to be here. But just as soon as you make that presumption, someone flies in from, you know, wherever that place was.
Right,
and then
right.
The next thing you know, you have, you know, an exponential caseload that's growing, you know, by the hour, if not by the minute. So so I guess the tough thing is, as physicians, you know, we're hopefully going to treat all of our patients as thoroughly and as effectively as we can. Number one, initially we didn't know exactly what treatments work, other than the symptomatic treatments, you know, if they, you know, if they had pneumonia or, you know, things of that nature, we tried to treat that therapeutically. But I mean, you know, a lot of the symptoms were not exactly clear until we saw from caseloads, you know, what the similar things were. So once we kind of got a grasp of that, then we kind of knew, you know, to isolate as much as we could, to keep a distance, because, you know, typically viruses and bacteria don't travel great distances, even when you cough or sneeze or touch you know, obviously by touching someone that transmits things as well. So, you know, by the time we kind of got our initial grasp on what to be cautious about and how to therapeutically approach everything, it had already, you know, unfortunately, exponentially got, you know, out of hand in terms of being in the population. And, you know, our medical system wasn't able to accommodate everyone, unfortunately, just as you saw, you know, in cities like New York and Los Angeles. Well, you know, every major city and even some smaller ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that the medical community did their best, but, you know, as you know, many physicians did die, and nurses and other staff, you know, important ancillary people, you know, lost their lives because of this. And, you know, predominantly in the African-American community, we lost a lot of people as well. So,
Wow. You know, all right. And so does it bother you guys when you hear politicians on the news talking about, you know, what to do and how? Does that bother you guys? Like, it's like, do you want to just say stay in your lane? You guys, just stay in your lane and let us take care of this. Because as the politicians were constantly talking about it and what to do and how we go, it's like, I don't think they know what they're talking about. Does that bother you guys? As doctors, when you hear that, go, you just try to ignore it.
Well, you know what? I actually would hate to speak for
others,
for all of my colleagues. So
right.
I guess the best thing that I could say is sometimes, you know, sometimes when people are speaking or trying to impart whatever their opinions are, or try to pass certain, you know, bills or laws, maybe if the appropriate amount of research has been done to justify whatever their thought process is, that would be the best way to go. But if when things get politically motivated, it doesn't always necessarily equate to being the correct answer to an issue or problem. So, but again, I'll leave the overall answer to each individual physician or provider out there, just because, you know, I think everyone will have their own opinion, but that's just kind of mine.
Okay. Awesome. All right,
I'm
man.
Just
well,
keeping
thank
it very
you.
General.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's still practicing, so we respect that, and thank you for sharing that much. I'm gonna flip to the music side real quickly here. I wanted to ask you, back in 1979, how did it work out for you to end up working with Ren Woods, my buddy Ren Woods? I had no idea you worked with Ren Woods.
Oh, I didn't know you were buddies with Ren Woods.
Yes.
Actually, that came about through a gentleman named Al McKay, who was
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Do you remember the left-handed guitar player from Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Yeah, I know Al McKay very well.
Yeah, so it came about through Al McKay, who I believe at that point had left Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yes, he did.
I'm not absolutely certain, but...
It was getting.
I know they
right
were on tour.
Point.
Yeah, because I think they went out on a tour or something, and I don't recall him being out there with them because he was in the studio. So. But yeah, Al McKay did, you know, a bunch of things outside of that. You know his.
Yeah. Right.
Being a part of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and so that's how.
So was
I
he working with? Was he
got
producing
my first
him
record with him?
No, oh, okay.
He was the, you know, at that point, I wasn't, I probably would not have felt, you know, ready to produce anything because I was just writing and I was trying to get my my bearings and my gauge on what was commercially viable. And so I learned a lot from working with a lot of people I worked with early on, you know, most notably Leon, of course, because he taught a lot of people how to how to put a song together,
yes.
You know, how to, you know, do melodic structure, arrangements, bass,
he taught.
You know,
yes, he
bass did. Line, et cetera. I mean, harmony, he's like an encyclopedia of music. So,
yes, absolutely.
But anyway, that was my beginning. Was okay. Renwood was my first song, because that song called Hooked on a Love Groove, if you know that
okay.
One.
Hooked
it wasn't
on,
a big
no,
hit,
I,
by the way.
Oh, man. You know, dude, I want to play a song of yours that I've fallen in love with lately. And we were talking earlier, and it's Shalimar, Talk to Me. Can you tell me a little?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Going to take a little small break. But can you tell us a little bit about it before, or you want to talk about it after?
I can talk about it before. I mean, Talk to Me was just I loved the track. So I said, I talked to Leon. I said, I love that track. I'd be happy to, you know, I know some other people had written on it as well, but I said I'd be happy to try to work on some lyrics for that. And, you know, this was during that time when, I don't know if you recall this, but Shalimar actually ended up with two albums out in a relatively short time frame.
Oh, yeah.
You
this
remember
is the throwaway album part. Yeah, we talked about that
right.
A few weeks ago. Yeah, and so... Yeah, and I remember, because Dynasty, we were recording all this stuff, right? And
But, I mean,
was like,
my feeling was, irrespective of what was going to go where and whatever it was going to be called in terms of whether or not there was going to actually get some push or anything because of, you know, whatever company was involved, I wanted
RCA.
It to be the best thing possible. So I sat there and I banged it out, and it came out pretty well. I mean, I actually loved it, and I thought
it
had potential to be a pretty big song for them. And but unfortunately, I think again, what did happen was it was at a time where it might have been confusing because they had two different albums out in a relatively short time frame. And
yes.
I know that was about the same time as the Friends LP, which, by the way, I wrote Friends as well, or I co-wrote Friends. I love Friends as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Friends album was gold and practically platinum.
Yeah, I just watched the live video of my friend Tony Westcott playing drums on that song over in the UK on, I think it's called something, Pop Top. Tops or Pops or something Pops, and it's a TV show, like, you know, Soul Train we have here, and it was just really, really good. And I was like listening to the song, and Tony was so excited to, you know, I mean, he's the one that taught me, because he played with the Silvers. Do you remember Tony Westcott? They used to always say he used to say salad, little short light skinny guy.
I remember Tony Salad.
Yeah. So Tony
was,
you know, so he's the one that got me the audition with Leon Silvers. And it all twisted around. Okay, Top of the Pops. Thank you, Greg. And so I was like, you know, I got Tony. I felt like, you know, I really wanted something for him because he did an amazing thing for me. So I got him the gig with Midnight Star and Shalimar. And, man, I was watching him playing drums. He's passed away, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I had heard that about him. And it's unfortunate, but...
Yeah. So he
Rest his soul, he was a good guy.
I didn't even know that was your... Yeah, he was definitely a good guy. So
very
listen,
talented.
Let's just take a... Oh, yeah. So we're going to take a small break. We're going to listen to this song, and we'll be right back to let... my brother, Glenn, get some water or something. I'm sorry, Glenn, for wearing you out. We'll be right back right after this.
Oh, no worries.
All right, here we go. We'll be right back. Shalimar.
Hey, that's a great
Talk
song, man.
Yeah, here we go.
If I contact with you, seems to fade.
that Mr. Glenn Barbie is involved in. Man, tell us about this one, my friend. Tell us about this one.
Oh, In the Raw?
Mm-hmm.
That was a track. The Whispers were working on, I believe the album was Love Is Where You Find It. And they had a bunch of nice songs on there. And this track... Leon came to, he was working on several Solar things at the time, I believe. And, he was going to have, Dana Myers, who you probably know pretty well. The people that's on the show would probably know who he is because he's written quite a number of hits, in his career. Particularly with Solar, but in any case, I remember sitting in Studio Masters with Dana in this room, and people were coming in and out, but we were just sitting there and knocked it out. It worked out well, and it came out and was a pretty big hit for them. I believe it was number 8 or something. So yeah, so it was a top 10 hit for them. So I was pretty proud of it. And I still love that song. Every time I go somewhere and it's playing, I think to myself how much fun that was to be involved in writing it. And that, you know, a lot of people seem to still love that song many years later.
I have to tell you, man.
I think it's been sampled a few times too.
Oh, wow. That's good for you.
I'm pretty sure I've seen, because, you know, once in a while I'll look at my ASCAP profile, and it shows all these artists that I wasn't aware that it, you know.
That we recorded your song.
Quote, unquote, written for, and it's because they did some sampling, and so you get I get a partial writer's credit for it.
Right, right. Absolutely. It's beautiful. Now, I have to tell you that my buddies back in Philly, when they heard this, song, I mean, they heard the other stuff that I did, like Anna Biko's song and all that stuff. But when they heard, when this one came out, they were, I mean, I got props, man. I was like, finally, like, they really liked, they were proud of me. And I was just so excited that this song kind of was the one that made them go, yes. That's it right there. That's it. And
wow.
So thank you for writing it, because it just really, really was a blessing. I think, did Ricky Silvers write this too?
Ricky was a part of the track. I know he played some things on it.
He played guitar. Yeah.
I know he was an integral part of that song in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the arrangement or whatever, but I remember seeing him in the studio doing some things with that track.
Right, right.
But Leon, of course, you know, I mean, what can you say? I mean, his production was really great on that song. I love everything about that track.
Yes, amen, man.
And I think I know the Whispers liked it a lot when they were listening to the demo. I know they loved it.
It's that one right there, man. As a matter of fact, that's one of Greg's niece's favorite songs. I mean, she just came all of a sudden. I'm talking to a young lady in the UK because of that song. She was like, "Oh, I love that song. I never knew the Whispers had a song like that." And she fell in love with it. So every time I play, I always dedicate it to her.
That's
so
very kind.
Huh?
I said, that's very kind. I mean, wonderful.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, man, I know I'm holding you, but I want to, you know, let you finish your story.
Don't hold up at all, man.
Okay, cool beans. Cool, cool. So tell me this then. All right, so you've been writing all these songs and stuff. How were you able to manage all of this stuff going on? I mean, was it like crazy for you? Like, okay, I'm doing music. You started out doing music, then all of a sudden you becoming a doctor, and then you came back here to California with us, and you were doing music again. How did you manage to do both? Was that a difficult task for you?
Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, it was fairly difficult, but I think the when I was coming back, the difference was that I was very selective at that point, and
mm-hmm.
only got involved with, you know, things that I could manage my time. Because, yeah, being a physician is a full-time job, and then being a parent as well, you know. So it's very gratifying that I was able to do both. But it is a challenge because, as you know, music doesn't go from 9 to 5 typically. It sometimes happens at the weirdest times of the day, you know, including 2 or 3 in the morning when you get the inspiration or, you know, you, for whatever reason, you go to the studio late at night. I was just blessed to be able to be selective. So that's how it worked. Otherwise, I don't know how it could have ever occurred, to tell you the truth.
Right.
Because, you know, at some point,
What's that?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Glenn. We have a 5-second delay. Sorry about that. So we kind of stepped on top of each other. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I just want to know, out of all the stuff that you did musically, you don't have to answer this, but I just want to know, do you have a favorite or something that just really is close to your heart out of the songs you worked on, and why?
Well, I have to tell you, that is something I can't answer because I truly, every song that's been out
mm-hmm.
on whatever artist has been out, whether it's been Janet Jackson, Jackie Jackson, The Silvers, Dynasty, Shalimar, Whispers, Howard Hewitt, you know, when he did his solo LP, I was a part of that first album called I Commit to Love. I co-produced that with him, by the way, along with a song called Lurk, Don't Want to Wait. And I Commit to Love was a pretty big hit. I heard that on the radio a lot when I was in Philadelphia.
Mm.
But I actually did, I don't know if you knew this, but I did a couple of tracks on Peaches and Herb, but the people they were signed to, I'm not exactly sure what happened. So maybe that'll come out one day. But this is like a few years back.
Okay.
I did the SOS Band. I did a song on them too.
Oh, wow.
With Ricky Silver and Gene Dozier. Do you remember Gene Dozier?
Yes, he's from my home. He's from Philly.
Yeah. Again, may he
rest
in peace. But
yes,
Gene was... I don't know if you know this. Did you know Gene was like a solo artist back in the late 50s, early 60s?
No.
Yeah, man. If you look him up, you'll see he was kind of a big artist in terms of, you know, I mean, he had some songs out that were known.
Wow.
And I remember, I remember when we were in Atlanta recording the song, I did a song, Can't Get Enough, for the SOS Band with Ricky Silver. Well, they produced it, but I wrote it, or I was a co-writer on that. And I remember Isaac Hayes came through the studio, and
what?
Isaac, you know, was a pretty big, you know, pretty big
Isaac
artist
Hayes.
And producer
mm-hmm.
at that time. And I remember Gene was sitting there like, you know how we all do that sort of rocking thing when we're listening to a track? You know, we're kind of bouncing forward and backward, you know, keeping the beat type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I remember Isaac walked in, and I was like, oh, there's Isaac Hayes, and I waved, and he waved back, and then he said, gee, Dozier. And then, you know, they gave each other a big hug and stuff. And he was like, what you been doing, Isaac? And they started talking and stuff. So Isaac said, yeah, man, this brother used to throw down, you know, and he was talking about when he was a solo artist. So
Right. Well, you know, I just for people who may not know who Gene Dozier is, he was the guy that did the string arrangements and horns, you know, did that kind of stuff for us on a lot of our records. As a matter of fact, he did the arrangement for And the Beat Goes On. So he came out of the he helped us come out of the box, you know. And so thanks to Gene Dozier, what a blessing. He's the one that actually came up with that part. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Gene.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And, Gene had a lot of musical training as well. So he was in kind of the old school world where, you know, they had charts and stuff, you know?
Right.
Because we didn't always work with charts, you know, when we were recording. Sometimes we would just kind of know, you know, where you're supposed to play, you talk about it ahead of time. But Gene was, I remember he used to show me his charts and stuff that he was working on. And then I'd go, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, look at this part here. And, you know, we'd talk about it and stuff. Because I had some training in classical music.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier.
I remember Chase and trying to find him one day, and then that's when I found out he was gone. I think he had moved to Vegas or something. And so, but anyway, thanks for sharing that story about him. I never knew he was an artist.
Good old Gene.
Yeah, good old Gene. All right, man. Well, listen, I want to, in closing, I'd like to just, you know, say thank you for your contribution to music in general. But this is a show that we're celebrating the sound of Los Angeles Records, and I just want to say thank you for blessing the sound of Solar with your abilities, man, your passion for music and your love for it and sacrifices that you made for the music. As you're pursuing your other career that you're still doing. And so thank you so much. We appreciate you. He's like a gentle giant. He is so tall. I told everyone, right? And so he's just a really nice guy. And the girl's kind of crazy about him. But, I just want to say thanks so much, man, for, you know, just coming on to the station as well and being so kind to the people that work here. Greg has nothing but great things to say about you. He's like, yeah, you got to get him on.
Oh,
I was very
kind. Thank you, Greg.
Yes. But in closing, man, is there anything that you would like to share, you know, with the listeners and anything that comes to mind?
I just, first of all, want to thank you as well, Wardell, because, you know, you're keeping the Solar sound alive. You know, you're helping to proliferate this around the world, really. And, you know, if people had, mm-hmm. in the public at large, had seen what kind of family Solar had become back in the 80s, I mean, you know, a lot of times I think the analogy is that Solar was kind of like thought to be the next Motown. I don't know if you ever have heard that statement, but
oh yeah, I heard it many times.
There were numerous individuals that participated in creating and continuing that sound. And of course, you know, you of course first and foremost have to think of, you know, the administrative people, you know, like Dick Griffey, you know, his wife Carrie Lucas, Carolyn Griffey,
mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, the groups themselves, which included yourself, you know, Leon, Kevin. I mean, I could go on and on and speak, you know, and we haven't even mentioned one of my writing partners that we lost recently that meant a lot to me, and he was a great guy as well, and that's William Shelby, who probably mentioned on the show before, but he was huge part of all that transpired to make, you know, the records a success. And you know, he worked a lot with Lakeside too because of his brother, I know, was because of Tommy, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So, but I just want to say basically, and, you know, Leon Silvers was kind of the house producer initially, but then, you know, his expertise rubbed off on a lot of people, and then you started to see a lot of other individuals that went on to have huge careers as musicians and, you know, artists and producers. You know, I mean, I needless to say, Babyface in L.A., the Calloway brothers. I know I'm some people. You know, Howard Hewitt obviously is still doing well. Jody Watley came out of the Solar family.
Still doing well.
Yeah. And who am I missing just because there's so many?
In terms of artists?
Climax. Yeah, Climax, the original great female band. I mean, there was no one better than them at the height of their careers, you know, and particularly as a female group. They were, they could jam. They could jam.
Yes.
So, but I was proud to be a part of all of this, you know, whatever small part I played. And I'm very humbled that, you know, many years later that people still enjoy the music that that all of those individuals I mentioned and more, you know, were a part of. And, again, it is an honor, and I'm totally humbled to have been a part of it, and I truly appreciate your including me for this radio show, you know, today, and letting me speak a little bit. Because I totally enjoyed every moment that I spent with you guys and all the fun we had in the studios that, you know, the records reflect the musical talent, but there was so much more magic that was made in terms of our friendships. And, you know, we became a family of sorts.
Absolutely.
Figuratively speaking. And I still to this day, you know, cherish and treasure a lot of those wonderful times that we spent together. So anyway, thank you for including me. And that's pretty much what I had to say. God bless you too.
You know, I'm going to sum it up with your song. We be definitely are family and friends. So family came out of our friendships, and it's just we love one each other constantly. And thank you, man, for just always showing up and being there and blessing all of us in so many different situations. As you know, the last time I saw you, we were at Richard Randolph's funeral. So thank you for always, you know, being there. You know, we are a family, man. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And so I appreciate you very much for taking the time out and coming on. And I'm going to close out with your song. And friends, anything you want to say about this song?
All I could tell you is friends literally encompasses all the blessings and the feelings I have for every one of our Solar brothers and sisters. And the lyrics reflect exactly how I feel about everybody. All right? You take
all
care,
right,
man, and God bless you. And I hope to speak with you soon and see you soon, okay?
Okay, brother. God bless and thank you. We'll be right back.
You're welcome.
Don't you be ashamed of how you feel.
Good old days. Something to remember me by. That is Dynasty. And good old music there. And I enjoyed. And then before that, we played Friends by Shalimar, which was a song that Glenn Barbie wrote. And then I played also In Raw by Glenn Barbie again. So great, great music, great things happening for Glenn. And we so do appreciate him. And thank you, Glenn, for coming on and blessing the show. We really appreciate you, man. And we just wish you all the best. And he's still doing his thing, man. Blessing the people in the hospitals, patients, and, you know, so thank you. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate you. Listen, guys, we only got about 20 minutes left, but I want to play a song for you called On Impact by the Whispers that I never heard before. So check it out. It is so cool. I love it. I'm not sure who. I think Foster Silvers did the song. So check it out on Solar Records Radio. We love you.
In the heat of the night, I'm lost in my control. In the heart of the passion, stolen through my soul. For desire has its way, no roots is so pretending. The tension was high.
just lay it back. You know, everybody's got a fantasy. I got a thing, you got a thing. You know what I'm talking about? But let me tell you about my thing. I've always had this fantasy about going to the planet of Venus and visit Venus Queen of Love and swim with her in the famous River of Love. So one night while I was asleep, I must have been dreaming because I heard a voice that said,
no!
I've been elected to take a trip afar to go galactic. Your destination, the Venus Queen of Love, your space connection. Is this really paradise I'm in? And are you really standing here next to me? And does your river flow with love? So please, girl, will you take a swim with me? Take me.
All right, guy, that's Shalimar Take Me to the River. Well, you guys have a blessed and beautiful weekend, and take care of yourselves. Just we'll kick the weekend off right here on Solar Records Radio for you. So, guys, take care. Thanks again to Glenn Barbie. We appreciate you coming on and blessing us with your story, my brother. Keep up the great work, and thank you for blessing so many people with your career as a medical doctor. We appreciate you, man. Love you for that. All right. And also, we appreciate the music that you wrote for Solar. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Man, double career. Go ahead, brother. Much love to all the listeners and our friends here at Solar Records Radio, Greg and all those guys that hang out with us and make this thing happen. Thank you again for blessing us. You guys all have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Tomorrow, Solar Wants to Dance at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard. Tune in. It's just a cardio show. We're going to work out. We're going to work it out. And please remember, this is Cancer Awareness Month, okay? Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, you know, let's pray and look out and make sure, ladies, that, you know, you go get your checkup. And men as well. It's not just a woman's thing. It's a combination. I mean, everybody, anyone can get it. So make sure, especially if it runs in your family, men, you know, make sure you get a checkup as well. All right. Well, you guys all take care. And we're up and out of here. See you tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard at Solar Wants to Dance. God bless you. Later, Greg. See you guys.
lift my spirits up. So I dropped it on